Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
It's found its way through to Enzo Fernandez. Mykolenko can now find Dwight McNeil, and off he goes. Tried to be pulled back by Gallagher there. Great ball through. Calvert-Lewin. Great save. Chance to Corey. Slams it home for Everton. He's the Johnny on the spot again. Under the goalkeeper, who's fists it down, and it's smashed home by Lewis Dobbin. What a moment for the 20-year-old. His first ever goal for Everton. Lewis Dobbin seals the victory.
Today we've had to fight against a very, very good Chelsea side with a top manager, in my opinion, someone I have a lot of respect for. We've had to fight. We've had to do all the ugly, hard yards, stay resilient as a team, press, defend and recover and stay solid. And we've done that against a very good side with some very good individual players.
It's just about putting a team performance in. It's not about individuals. You know, everyone is in this together now. We've got to keep picking up points and keep progressing as a team and keep the momentum going.
Hello, Blues, and welcome to the Toffee Web Podcast, here to discuss another superb Everton win, this time over Chelsea at Goodison Park. It was, of course, the Toffees' third win in a row and their ninth in the last 13 matches in all competitions. If this keeps up, it's going to be quite frustrating seeing where we should be in the table, were it not for the 10 points we were deducted by the Premier League, because Everton, of course, should be in 10th place and just 4 points off 6th. How very Everton would it be to be denied a place in Europe again by the powers that be, eh? I have Paul and Adam joining me. And Adam, you made a pilgrimage across the Pennines to Merseyside to witness the mighty Blues put Maurizio Pochettino's expensively assembled rabble to the sword at the Grand Old Lady. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it must have been a top day out.
It was a really top day out. And it's great because you're on cloud nine, you're walking out, your voice is hoarse, mine's still hoarse, clearly. you just feel absolutely on top of the world and you think it doesn't really get much better than this. And then who do you see in the sea of faces but Paul Traill. it was brilliant. It was a cherry on top. That was great. And kind of took me back to sort of a pandemic where you'd sort of work with colleagues who joined sort of halfway through and you'd never met them in real life. And then they met you and they go, I thought you'd be taller / more handsome.
So this was a chance meeting then?
I wasn't wearing a carnation and a smile. It was pure chance. But you were in a popular place, weren't you, Paul? You're based like Norm from Cheers, where everyone knew your name and you often meet people from.
A few Dutch mates were over, so kind of ran into them a little bit out of the blue, and a mate just before that ran into you from Canada just out of the blue, and then ran into you. So, but I guess our listeners
just probably feel less excited.
Yeah. Well, you know, don't do it down. Yeah, but our listeners probably won't know though. Most of us haven't actually met before in person, which is quite. So it was just like a real treat to run into. I was just walking along, desperately trying to get to the pub to before the crowd got in, and Paul, you know, you look at somebody and like, who I know who that person is, but oh shit, it's that foot sort of thing. So
I get that a lot. No, yeah, nice. I mean, cool. We've done it now, haven't we? So don't have to do it again. It was great, and it was obviously it was a fantastic atmosphere anyway. It was really buoyant, obviously, with that second goal going in to quell the nerves, which had definitely started to build up, certainly in that last 15 minutes for me. It was a tough watch at times, but also kind of comfortable. We kept aside at arm's length. We've got players who can hurt you. We made them look pretty ordinary, as well as my family. I guess he is family as well, but less so. And I say that pointedly. My brother-in-law came along, he's a Chelsea fan. So he was very embittered, but I had a great day out as well, and I think was sort of sneakily a bit happy for us because he could tell it was one of those days. And they really didn't do much, did they? But luckily when it mattered, we were clinical. So fantastic day out, great. And like I say, what's better than 3 points? 3 points and Paul Traill. That's my answer.
It was a proper game of football, wasn't it? That's what I really liked about the game. It was a real battle. Yeah, I mean, a lot of tackles flying in. We defended really, really well, I thought, particularly when we were ahead. The Ukrainian, is it Murdic? The Ukrainian, I thought Patterson did really well on that right side. When he was thrust into that. It was a tough game. It was a real battle. Chelsea weren't great, no, but they were competitive. It was we had to really be at our best there. So it was really what football should be like. You know what I mean? I think it was, you know, the atmosphere was brilliant. It was real good tempo to the game. I couldn't believe how quickly it whizzed by. And then when it got to half time, I was like, flipping heck, that was a really quick 45. And then same again when we got to 7 minutes of stoppage time. Just good to see a proper game and two teams are getting stuck in and going at it, and to come out on the right side of it's just brilliant. I mean, yeah, we deserve to win, no doubt about that. But it wasn't like some of the other games this season. We just created a ton of chances and missed them all. We were actually, as you say, much more clinical with the opportunities we did have, you know. So a couple of great finishes there from Decore and from Dobbin. Great to see Dobbin score, wasn't it? It's a really nice moment when you see a young kid come on and score. So really good for him. And some of the footage from social media from Everton's really, really good, isn't it? About how much it meant to him. It's really, really nice to see. So good on him. Made up for him. So yeah, it's just they're just all working so hard for each other. They're just playing like a proper team, and you just got to give credit, Sean Dyche, so much credit for getting so much out of them. I don't think that many other managers in the league would get that much out of that group of players. Now, we have got some quality, but we got a lot of, you know, players who are just probably exceeding expectations a bit at the moment, I think. And just good on them for just having the right mentality and really, really sticking at it. And what a run we're on. It's just, you just can't believe we're 17th, can you? You know what I mean? It just feels like, I know we've had a 10-point deduction, obviously, but how can you win so many games and just be where you are? I can't believe even after winning them games, we'd only be 10th, to be honest. it's a really, must highlight the really poor start we made. And, you know, a lot of reasons to be positive at the moment. And the lads have just got to keep on going, haven't they?
I think we're like, aren't we like something like top four, top five form at the moment over the last, eight or nine games? I think since we had that really poor start, I think the results we've had since then, I think we're in, you know, we're definitely amongst the top four or five, which, I mean, it's just testament to what Sean Dyche is doing. I mean, you know, we keep coming back to the intangibles like mentality, spirit, unity, determination, and that is credit to both the players and the manager. And as you said, Paul, it's really hard to overstate the job that Dyche and his team is doing at the moment, because I think, as we've mentioned before, the Preds could quite easily have just folded, you know, after that points deduction. You know, particularly those who've been in a relegation battle for more than 2 years now, and they've kind of, you know, just thought, well, to hell with this now. we've kind of given everything to keep ourselves up, and then we have to go do all over again, and this time is not our fault. So, you know, I think Dyche said on Sunday that you can't buy things like mentality, but I think you can recruit with that in mind, which is something that obviously David Moyes was very good at during his time at Goodison. I mean, Ashley Young's 38, but he's a model pro. You know, James Tarkowski, the same. Captain material who'd run through brick walls for you, Idris Gueye, is 34. And he probably didn't bank on winning anything when he came back to us, you know, but I mean, he goes out and gives his all every week. I mean, even Abdoulaye Doucouré, I mean, he's the wrong side of 30 now, but he's in the form of his life and clearly playing for the cause and loving it. You know, he's not just sort of, you know, phoning it in for the remainder of his contract. So, you know, I often wonder where some of the players in this day and age get their motivation, because, you know, they're paid so much money. And obviously they don't all have it. I mean, some are obviously there for the wages, but, you know, when you get this kind of unity and sense of purpose, I mean, it's an incredible motivator. Obviously the fans are a huge part of this. I don't think you can have what we currently have at Everton without the kind of visceral passion that Evertonians have shown since, I mean, you go all the way back to December 2021, I think, really. You know, there's been some debate in the last couple of days about whether Everton would be, you know, would have won these last three games in particular had it not been for the points deduction or the kind of fury around that. But our form was clearly already on an upswing. We were already looking like a solidly bottom half side, you know, sort of mid-table bottom half side. But for me, this siege mentality that's created by the loss of the 10 points, this kind of feeling of betrayal by the Premier League and this sort of big middle finger that we've collectively given to the powers that be has just given us that little bit more fuel that I think in the last kind of 10 days has really pushed us past Forest, Newcastle, and now Chelsea. I mean, I've run out of ways of expressing my pride for this club. It's just amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on a lot of the experienced pros and how it probably has, because I guess for a lot of them, if you're Ashley Young and you're 38, you've probably think you've seen everything in the game, and then 10 points get taken off you. And I guess it's a new challenge to face. It's a new problem to deal with. I don't necessarily like the way that, obviously, the kind of the wider media narrative, oh, it's galvanized everyone, isn't it great? It's not a positive thing, certainly, but it has, I guess, highlighted the progress that we've made under Dyche. It's highlighted that unity, and as well as those players who, as you say, are seasoned. People like Doucouré, though, I guess you'd argue he's a bit of a late bloomer and is starting to sort of be one of the older heads in that group and starting to really show his quality, which he certainly did with the goal. I think the Doucouré who joined Everton in the Ancelotti years probably doesn't take that chance. He probably sort of goes away the goalie goes or blazes it. And you know what? He still might, because it's Abdoulaye Doucouré. But it's a really composed finish on his 100th appearance as well, which is kind of mad, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And who knows what that figure would have been if Lampard had stayed on. But then also you look at the younger players who are coming through, and obviously the two young substitutes who came on Sunday both had really positive impacts, as players like Patterson, like Dobbin, who I guess we've not really been talking about as much, partly because of injury, partly because of the form of other players. And then McNeil, who is still incredibly young. Garner as well. Bramthwaite, who, again, we have to talk about, because my heart sank when I saw him hobble off a pitch. And
as
I thought,
we all did, yeah.
Yeah. I know he's missing for the Burnley fixture, but obviously knowing that he's out for one game, actually, maybe not the worst time to serve a suspension if you've taken a knock in the previous game. But again, just a colossus at the back and showing something different in his game to soldier on following an injury. there's a really, really good group. And like you say, it's a group that you can be proud of, both for the players who've been there, done that, and who inspire that bit of confidence. Certainly none better than Tarkowski, as you mentioned, Lyndon. But also those players who you think, wow, how far can this player go? How far can Onana go when he's not really fully fit and he comes on into that midfield and starts to dominate against, let's face it, two midfielders who cost twice our entire lineup put together. He really dominated that mid. Well, dominate is maybe a little strong, but he certainly doesn't look out of place. And again, has only played probably about half the professional fixtures that Decore's played in his Everton career, in his entire career. So there's real room for improvement as well. And I guess the interesting challenge, because this is Everton and because it's me, we've got to have a sort of pessimistic end to the ramble, is how is it going to look now that we are starting to just see maybe the first little bite of suspensions and potentially injuries as well. That's obviously the trickier thing of playing this system under Deitch and expecting a lot of players, and certainly there'll be some tired legs after Sunday. But the great thing is that in terms of the mental side of it and the spirit side of it, it really couldn't be higher at the moment, could it?
No, the lads are giving it everything. And that, like James Garner was a good example on, you know, just coming back from sickness. You know, I mean, he can't have been quite 100%, but he never stopped. You know, there was examples throughout the whole team. And yeah, it hadn't really occurred to me, Lyndon, as you said, the experienced heads are really sort of giving us a lot at the moment, aren't they? You really can't be asking for much more than what they're providing. And mixed that with a good young nucleus, as you said there, said Adam as well. So it's a light squad is the thing, isn't it? You know, I think, and you know, you'd wonder if we do have a bit of an injury crisis. Yeah, we probably will hit a sticky point at some point, just due to squad size. We've got to be prepared for that, and we've got to kind of be a little bit accepting of that as well, I think, because they've given us a lot. But you earn it, don't you? You know, the players earn that right by giving us what they're doing now. So absolutely brilliant. And we said that a lot last season about Sean Dyche having to find a way, but there's all sorts of different permutations and challenges here to face them, wasn't there, in terms of squad availability. But it's how he finds a way now, I guess, with the suspensions, the injuries going into the Burnley game. But I think he did a good job of that against Newcastle. Nobody would have seen Jack Harrison going into midfield and doing a marvellous job in there, you know. So it's he's just finding ways to do things, and yeah, just stretching the best out of the squad. He pushes them as far as he possibly can, I think, doesn't he? If anyone watching the game on Sunday will have seen Jack Harrison. He is knackered. He had a very busy game on Thursday. He's dead on his feet. But like he still eked every last little bit out of him, didn't he? And that's what he tries to do, you know. And you just can't fault any of them at the moment. So it's you said it best, Lynn, and so proud of them. And I thought that was potentially one of, if not the best, certainly one of Decore's best games for Everton, I thought, on Sunday. Something frustrates me a lot, Decore, and we've said this before, and how can you be disappointed with somebody who produces so many goals and assists? You can't, you know, but like he just drives me mad with some of the things he does. But he didn't, maybe I think there's one thing sticks in my mind of a misplaced pass or something silly, but other than that, he was just everywhere. The amount of tackles he made, the amount of chasing back he did, he was, you know, see how pumped he was, pumping his fists at the Gladys Street. It was just great to see, and good on him for scoring a good goal. I didn't realise it was a 100th appearance, so that's good. So good for him, and just amazing the contributions. He's getting so much more out of the players than perhaps they're, by rights of it, it should be able to do, you know what I mean? So particularly some of the ages and stuff. So yeah, I could just only really echo what you guys have both just said, because you're just so proud of them both. It's of them all, so you're just fantastic, isn't it?
I think he's scored as many goals as any midfielder in the Premier League since Deitch took over. I think it's 11. So I couldn't even remember a mistake that he'd made against Chelsea. So that's just testimony, because you know, we've had the conversation ourselves before where, you know, he is a frustrating player and he can be clumsy, but I mean, he just seems, he's really in a zone right now. And just the confidence to, to hit things first time, which I think we've said is his greatest strength, is, you know, if he's going to do anything, hit it first time, because the more time he has to think, you know, the more things go awry. But yeah, he's just terrific right now. Some of the reports have kind of compared him to Tim Cahill, not obviously in style, but just kind of in impact and that ability to start chipping in with goals. from unexpected sources. So yeah, long may that continue. But yeah, the match on a whole, I think, was one, as we've said, we really had to sort of gut our way through. We obviously play a high intensity game that demands a lot of running. And we were playing obviously on a day's less rest than Chelsea after what was a huge effort against Newcastle. So, you know, to not let any of those intensity levels drop against what is still a very good group of players, even if they don't look like much of a team yet under Pochettino, I mean, that was hugely commendable. And you can see and hear how much pride Deitch had in that team afterwards. You know, some who's trying not to get over excited, I think, but you could really sort of see almost this kind of paternal pride in what, you know, in how the players have been responding to his instructions and the way they're being applied by the players on the pitch, and the results we've been picking up. You know, as I said, since that faltering start, it was hard to pick a man of the match for me as against Newcastle, because frankly they were all excellent to a man. But again, against Chelsea on Sunday, it was much more about doing, as Deitch said, the hard yards, the gritty stuff, and staying in the game. And in that respect, I think, Adam, the defenders probably stood out the most, didn't they?
Yeah, and you mentioned Newcastle there, and a lot was made of their performance against us midweek, well, Thursday, that they tired and that the likes of Trippier made mistakes. And to stay that focused against that Chelsea side so late on, to hold them out and really restrict them. Chelsea had a couple of chances. Most of them were from distance. And most of them as well, when they worked the ball wide, there was always an Everton body either closing down or getting in the way. And again, to refer back to Newcastle, because they like to talk about Everton, so I might as well do the same for a second. I saw a little bit of the Spurs game, and you saw Spurs getting into very similar positions to the ones that the Chelsea wingers were getting into. And they were porous, and it shows you how drilled that back four, the back five, I guess, if you include Pickford as well, is at this point in time. They're really settled. The fact that Ashley Young can go off injured and Patterson can really seamlessly slot into that defensive unit. Firstly, credit to him, as I mentioned earlier. I think we've been saying for a while we'd like to see more of Patterson. And he's certainly not let anyone down, his substitute appearances in the last couple of games. And again, so that's probably the best I've seen him in an Everton shirt. I think he was really, really solid, and again, showed his ability to cover ground, which is something that you'd like to see, obviously, a bit more of as the season goes on. But it's also testament to, yeah, the work Deitch has done on getting the rest of that defensive unit so well drilled, so organised, that even though it was tense and, yeah, 7 minutes goes up and you fear the worst and you really do stop feeling, oh, it's getting to that point in the game where this is going to feel worse. You know, a point at the start of the day maybe doesn't seem so bad. Certainly seven from that nine, I'm sure we all would have snapped our hands off. But to hold out and to do it so resolutely really, really bodes well for this run of fixtures in December. And I remember we said, looking ahead to these games, and this was prior to the points deduction, that, okay, these sides, a lot of them on paper appear better than ourselves, but actually we might be able to get something from it. And Deitch has really, really turned the tables in our favour. He's found a way of winning these kinds of games, winning games at Goodison again when it matters. It really does bode well for, obviously, the tough games to come in this busy festive period. But yeah, you're right. It starts from the back. Again, Pickford, also worth giving a mention to him, made a couple of saves. I've got to say, the save from distance from Palmer, at first I thought that he's kind of showboating for the cameras a little bit. It's actually a really good save. Watching it back at home, I was like, he's done really well to actually get the distance that he got on it. And again, you compare it to other keepers in the division, other sides, you know, we've got a really, really good defensive unit on our day. And then obviously it's great when we take the chance at the other end of the pitch.
Yeah, I think Tarkowski's really sort of having a big impact on all that. He's really skipping well there. I think he's keeping that. He's getting in the way, making so many blocks and headed clearances. He's really sort of wearing his heart on his sleeve at the moment, James Tarkowski. That's it's great to see. Yeah, I'm intrigued looking ahead to the Burnley game. how, if we can keep this up, because obviously, you know, you'd say the likelihood is that the that Young won't be there. Likelihood is that Coleman won't be there, I'd say. So Patterson's probably going to have to play there. And you'd assume Michael Keane will be coming in, although he wasn't on the bench on Sunday. I don't know what that was for. I don't know if that was
he's not fit, is he?
It's got an ankle injury.
Yeah. So it could be Ben Goffey. So it'd be interesting to see how much of an opportunity them lads, you know, how well they take their opportunities, I suppose, particularly Goffey. I think Patterson, there's a reasonable chance Patterson gets himself a lot of runner games here. You know, I think that, the other two might take a lot bit longer to recover. We don't know much about Coleman's yet, do we? How serious that might be. So hopefully not too bad. Young, again, he could be out. We don't know a lot yet, but he could potentially be out for a little while, you know. So Patterson might, you know, have to be available for it. Then we've got Christmas games coming up. He could see Garner there at some point, yeah, and things like that. Or maybe Godfrey, you know. So, these lads have had to wait for the opportunity, and they've got to go and try and take it now. The midfield's a bit more simple to sort of sort out because an honour just comes in for Gay, doesn't he, I guess? I'm interested to see how well they can cope with the challenge of Burnley on Saturday with a changed defence.
Yeah, I think one of the things that surprised me is this sort of narrative around Nathan Patterson, because when he's come in this season in the last few months, he doesn't really put much of a foot wrong. No. It just seems that almost people have sort of defaulted to the fact, well, if Deitch isn't picking him, then there must be something wrong there, or he hasn't been in good form. He has been in good form, you know. He's just been preferred, or rather an older, more experienced player has been preferred to him. I thought he was excellent when he came on against Chelsea. And, you know, that's the player that I've always thought that he is. I think you have to go back to the Brighton home game for the last time he had a real howler, and he was not the only one who had a howler on that evening, you know. So I think that he's due his chance, and I'm hoping that he gets a run on the side and can take it, because, you know, he's younger, so he's got the legs to get up and down the pitch, and therefore he offers a bit more in the final third, just purely by, you know, more occasions in the final third to create something. And I think he got the assist against a Sheffield United. And so there's no reason why he can't sort of grab this opportunity. But yeah, it is going to be a bit of a testing time for the squad, because as we've said, it is a very, very small squad. And I think that kind of difficult winter that we've kind of feared might be ahead, might be starting now, because we've talked about, you know, suspensions and injuries maybe start to bite just when the fixture list starts to bite on us as well. You know, obviously we have the knocks to Young and Coleman. As we've said, Keane is an early injury. I'm not too sure. I have no idea how serious this ankle problem is, but, you know, he wasn't in the squad at all. And then we obviously have Gay and Branthwaite serving one match bans. I think, Adam, as you said, if you had to pick one game this month, for a couple of our first choice starters to be missing for a game because of a suspension, this will probably be it. You know, no disrespect to Burnley, and it's not going to be an easy game because, you know, they're sort of starting to find their feet a little bit, Burnley, a little bit. I think they got the 1-1 draw at Brighton at the weekend, which is obviously a good result for them. So, you know, it's not ideal if all of these players miss out. We're down to our last two available centre backs, but, you know, you have confidence now that under Sean Dyche we're going to be able to manage it. But yeah, big opportunity for Patterson, big opportunity for Ben Godfrey if he's the one who ends up playing.
Yeah, you feel like Godfrey's got the biggest point to prove, don't you? We've spoken about him a few times. That he's, I'm trying to think, the last time he played, was it in the League Cup?
Doncaster, I think he started. Yeah. didn't set the world alight. So he's coming in very cold in this one.
Yeah,
if he plays, yeah.
Yeah, and he's one of the few who's played a couple of reserve games as well. So, but yeah, he's certainly not, we've used the term before, Dyche fit, you'd think. But yeah, there is some kind of player there with Ben Crawford. It's interesting that he's one of the few players who's been kind of linked with a January exit, partly because he's not been playing, but also with fairly high-profile sides like the Spurs were mentioned. So we've seen in the past that there's something there, and he's had bad luck with injuries. I think he suffered quite badly with COVID as well, didn't he? Again, you're right. It's probably the kind of game you'd want to kind of come back into. Burnley, you're right, are picking up a little, but I feel like they're fairly kind of passive with the ball, and I think that will suit us. The thing I'd be a little more concerned about, and I think we've all sort of alluded to it with the wide players, certainly Harrison at the end of that game was really tired. McNeil, again, put in some real yards and was clearly suffering at the end. That's one area of the pitch where Dobbin coming on and making an impact is great, but I can't see Sean Dyche starting him. Likewise, Dan Juma has been cold and clearly isn't really favoured at the moment. That's maybe the area where I feel we could have the most joy with Burnley in terms of pressing high on their back four and letting them make some mistakes, really. But it might not be one that we can fully take advantage on Saturday. But I guess there's 6 days. These guys are getting paid more than enough to sort of look after themselves in the week. And also, there is nothing more buoyant than a win like that on Sunday and three wins on the bounce.
Yeah,
that's sometimes enough to give you the momentum to carry through. And when you start to look at the gap that's opening up between ourselves and that bottom three with a win on Saturday, regardless of what happens to a points deduction, I mean, it's balmy to think that, you know, without that, we'd be, what, 3 points behind where Newcastle are now, and, you know, just a couple behind the likes of Spurs and Manchester United as well. It's a really impressive little run we put together. And even with those injuries and suspensions, even with a bit of a patched up back four, I still fancy us to at least get something away at Turf Moor on Saturday.
I think watching Burnley, there's always a mistake in them. And that's the thing. If we can be as kind of clinical as we were on Sunday, then we've probably got at least one goal in the game, you know. So
that was a much better way of saying what I just said, Paul. Thank you.
Short and sweet. You know? There you go. There's obviously, you'd imagine there'd be opportunities in the game to score. I just don't know what to make of this one. The almost the lazy thing to say is, oh yeah, come on, we're better than them. We can go and win that, and obviously we can go and win that game. Because obviously it's an evening game in Burnley. You know, imagine that obviously there's a lot of connections there. Sean Dyche, Tarkowski, Keane, McNeil. You know what I mean? No matter how much you... And we've had it, you know, with Moyes, for example. No matter how much you may admire and like the previous guy, the crowd still want to get one over on them when they come back, you know? So there's going to be... If anything, if Burnley played now like they used to play under Dyche at Burnley, then I'd probably be a little bit more fearful for them, because that's been like, you know, tackles are flying in, they're getting really stuck into the game, the crowd are all up. But the way they play, we had this kind of when Martinez came to Everton after following Moyes' sort of intensity approach. Martinez came and the crowd were just, you know, that first season picked up a bit, but incredibly flat, because it can't help but sort of dampen the atmosphere a little bit when they're just seeing all this little passes, the little moves, and it's not much to get that excited about. And that feels to me that's a bit more like how Burnley play. You know what I mean? So I don't know if they can play into their crowd a bit more. I'd probably give them more of an opportunity. I hope that Ben Godfrey has a better performance than last time he was at Burnley, because you remember they had that absolute shocker, that's the one we lost 3-2, and I think it was a real worry about relegation then, and he was really culpable for the winner, I think, you know. So hope he does a bit better than that, assuming he plays. I just don't know how to make it this game. I think it's going to be tough. And I thought, looking at all them games when before, I think, like, you know, maybe after the Newcastle one, I thought, like, Chelsea home. We've just done Newcastle. We've just done the hard work. Be beaten Forest as well. I thought Chelsea at home, Burnley away, Spurs away. Burnley's the most important one, because obviously where they are in the league. So, you know, we got to, regardless of what, you know, where we think we should be and all that, we've got to get distance. You know, we've got 4 points. It's effectively five, really, isn't it, the goal difference? If we can make that, you know, 7 points away from them lot down there, then, you know, I mean, then it's it really starts to look a lot more rosy. And you go into Spurs with a bit of freedom. Lose that at Burnley, where, you know, we're then just a point off, but potentially, you know, down there, say a few teams above us win, all of a sudden it could, you know, things can change very quickly, you know what I mean? So just try not to be too overly cautious, but I think it's going to be a tough battle at Burnley, and just hope the lads are well prepared for it. But you can be confident they will be, because, you know, Sean Dyche is he just has them so well drilled at the moment, and mentally the attitude's fantastic from the players at the moment. Also, that stems from the manager, so I'm confident they'll be up for it. My slight concern would be the changes he's going to have to make to the defence, and let's see what impact that makes.
Yeah,
Yeah, 100%. I think we're the kind of team that Burnley won't want to face, because they're one of those teams under instruction to play out the back at all costs. And, you know, with our pressing, you know, Dyche is going to go in there and say, look, just try and force an early mistake, get an early goal, you know, just pop whatever air out of the balloon that they have coming into the game. And then, you know, we can manage it from there and sort of try and keep this excellent record of never having lost under Sean Dyche when we score first. So, you know, there's the incentive right there. As you say, Paul, it's really down to what changes we have to make in defence. I think this is going back to the Chelsea game, but just the one player we haven't really mentioned who is probably the standout performer on the pitch against Chelsea was Vitaly Makhelenko, mm-hmm. who just keeps on improving. Talk about players not putting a foot wrong. I can't remember a single thing he did wrong against Chelsea. I mean, he was just superb against, as we know, a very, very good team. I mean, even Raheem Sterling comes on, no change. He's got, you know, he just basically put Sterling in his back pocket alongside Palmer, and it was just, yeah. I mean, who would have thought? And it's actually, when you look back at the last 18 months and the sort of the journey that he's been on, the revelation that he's sort of played a year and a half with a hip problem, yeah. Kind of, you know, this kind of that he this obviously this revelation that came out in the match day program, that suddenly you think, oh well, that makes sense, you know, but even despite that, he's been making this sort of incremental and gradual improvement, even playing with this injury. So I just, I can't say enough about him and what he's been doing. It's been great to see.
Yeah, definitely. And that interview, obviously, it highlights the stress of what he's obviously had to deal with in his homeland.
Of course, yeah.
Let alone, I mean, there's a whole litany of things that would give any other player an excuse to kind of have a bit of a slow start. And he's hardly been disastrous, has he? He's just not necessarily replaced the player that we lost in Luca Dean at that time, certainly in a more sort of free-flowing attacking side. Somebody who'd chip in with goals and assists. Well, now Mikhailenko's doing that and a lot of things that Luca Dean could never do. It's not a total transformation, but it's just great to see how confident he is. You can feel the trust in other players around him. And as I mentioned, as part of that defensive unit, he's so integral now to the way we play. It gives us so much more balance. You mentioned as well in them that obviously Sterling came on. One thing Chelsea did do, and you could argue it was maybe to their detriment, but they were changing things up quite a lot. They were switching players out wide. Obviously, Reece James went off injured, so Cucurella was getting quite a lot of space early on. And I was sort of like, well, if one player can have space in the pitch, probably Cucurella. But he was getting in some really dangerous positions on the left-hand side. And then once he moved over to the right and Mikhailenko was there, he was kind of out of the game, really, which, again, might be down to him. But certainly those other players that you mentioned, he kept them quiet. He's done that in other games against top opposition. He started to roam forward a lot more. We've seen that in the goals. But just the fact that there'll be little moments now where he bombs on forward to make that run, and it just gives Dwight McNeil that little bit more time for Dwight McNeil to dig a cross out. That's such a big difference to our game. And yeah, the interesting thing will be whether we can start to maybe try and replicate that on the right-hand side with Patterson and Harrison, mm-hmm. hopefully striking up a bit of an understanding as well, because then we really will start to look dangerous from out wide and hopefully feed Dom, who, again, is probably the one player we haven't mentioned yet, who worked really hard, but apart from that one chance which led to the goal, was a little starved of service. And I'd like to think that against Burnley, as you say, Paul, with the mistakes that you'd expect him to make, in a similar way to when Bournemouth came to Goodison, it's a side who you really want to take advantage of. And I've been tipping Dom to score for a while, and ever since I started doing that, he hasn't. But I fancy him to get one away at Burnley. But you can definitely see both ends of the pitch, Mikhailenko being heavily, heavily involved.
Yeah, it's a shout, Dominic, isn't it? He hasn't scored in a while, so he's got to be due a goal. Maybe this weekend that'll be nice. Yeah, he's had big shoes to fill coming in. You know, replacing Luca Dean was a very good left back. I think regardless of what people like to sort of bet, I thought he was a really good player. Really, and he's showing that really now. He's a really quality player, Luca Dean. So big shoes to fill coming into him. And it's taken him a while, Mikalenka, but he's looking so accomplished now. He really is. He's almost got like a little bit of swagger about him now. You know, I mean, he's really looking the part. And you can't praise him enough, can you? If we just talk about just getting your head down and working hard and, you know, doing the best you can. And good on him. He's pitched him with some bloody good goals as well this season, don't forget, you know. So really good on him. Really, really pleased for him. I think we all are. It's, again, been through a lot, obviously. So doing really, really well there. Let's just hope it continues. I mean, that's the thing we've got now, isn't it, though, with Jung out, for example, who would play left back if Mikalenko got, you know, was to get a little bit of a knock? If Keane doesn't recover from that ankle thing, if Godfrey goes down, who comes into centre back then? You know, you haven't even got Coleman to kind of fill in there. You know what I mean? It's
Mikalenko can play centre back, but then that goes back to your previous point. Who plays left back then? You know, we don't have a kind of versatile Garner type to play on the left.
Probably and McNeil, if you, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose McNeil,
Ben,
yeah.
What do you do on the left? Yeah, it's yeah.
So hope it doesn't come to that, eh? But one final mention to the scorer of the second goal. I mean, what a moment! What a moment for Lewis Dobbin. I almost just lived the whole thing vicariously through him. I'm sure we've all kind of thought that if we'd ever played for Everton, what it would feel like to score, you know, at Goodison. Obviously, it wasn't in Atlanta Street. Unfortunately, it was the Park End, but he won't care. I mean, brilliantly taken goal. And I've had some question marks over whether he has the quality to sort of hold down a first team starting role in the team. Obviously, very young to be making that determination now, but that will just light a fire under him. And terrific finish, terrific moment. Loved it.
Really good finish, yeah. And it was nice that we kind of put the ball in the box at that time, because there was that sort of, oh, shall we try and keep it in the corner? And I know Bramthwaite didn't commit to going forward, because again, you could tell he was playing through the pain barrier, but when it dropped to him, it was a fantastic finish, and you could feel the release from him. He's impressed at times. There have been others where, you're right, Lennon, and he's looked maybe a little out of his depth, and certainly early on in the season he was being asked to kind of play quite an integral role, having only really had senior football at League One with Derby, wasn't it? So So it's a hell of a step up, and he's only 20 years of age. There's still room to develop. You know, we sent Leon Osman on loan to Derby many a moon ago, and he didn't really kind of bloom into a first team player until well into his mid 20s. So there's still potential there, and I think certainly over this festive period, you'd expect him at least to be kind of coming on for those last sort of 25, 30 minutes of games, as the likes of Harrison and McNeil kind of gradually make me tired watching him, because certainly it's, at times, bless him, Harrison on Sunday. I think there's one time where he kind of tripped over his own feet, didn't he? Because he just looked completely spent. Absolutely chuffed for Dobbin. I mean, yeah, great to see someone score the first goal in blue. And hopefully chips him with a few more. It's great to see players coming off the bench and making an impact, just like Beto did against Newcastle.
Yeah, so it's always great to see products of the youth development system coming through and contributing. Now, we don't know, you know, how long, what sort of impact Lewis Dobbin's going to have at Everton, but it's great you see there's something right there which you can never take away from him. He scored, a really important goal at Goodison Park, and that might be as good as it ever gets for him. We don't know. You know what I mean? But like, let's hope it's not. You know what I mean? But like, he's made his mark, and that's just a beautiful thing. Regardless of what else happens, Lewis Dobbin, it's great that Sean Dyche has given him, you know, given him that opportunity. He hasn't had loads of opportunities, but to be getting in ahead of Dan Juma, you know, that says something. I know it's probably more to do with Sean probably not fancying Dan Juma to do the hard work, do the defensive work. I think when the Corey finally gets his 50 yellow card, maybe we'll see a game from Dan Juma in that number 10 role. We'll see. But like, really pleased for him. It's just such a nice moment to see. And we haven't really got too many youth players out there at the moment. You know what I mean? So obviously we've sold a lot of them on. Obviously we sold Anthony Gordon. I've forgotten his name, the one that went to Coventry
Tom Cannon and Ellis Sims,
yeah.
Ellis Sims, yeah, that's it, thank you. Yeah. And Tom Cannon, yeah, I mean, so he's like handy players, you know, like, and so really, you know, it's just good to see somebody from the youth system is there and is contributing and scoring. So really well done to the young lads. So really made up for them.
Yeah, I was going to ask what it means for Dan Juma, because he's been seemingly out of the picture for a while now, and people are now starting to speculate: is there something more to it? Does Deitch not fancy him? Is he not putting in the effort on the training ground? It's an interesting one. I mean, I was trying not to read too much into it because he's kind of rotated Beto and Chimiti for there for a while, bringing one on as the sub in one game and then the other in the next game. So potentially, I think we may get an answer over the next month. I think as we've said, with these games coming up, we're gonna need to maximize the squad. As small as it is, to the greatest degree, I think.
Oh, yeah. If Andy Lonergan's playing left wing, then you know it's a problem with Dan Juma, don't you?
He might be the emergency centre back.
That one's more likely.
That's another Burnley connection as well, isn't it? I think.
Is it now? Interesting.
The performance against Man United off the bench with Dan Juma concerned me a little bit. Not that, you know, he was thrust into a game to see how which had really gone away from us by that point, really. But like, it just seemed like rather petulant. He was just trying he's a creative player, so obviously he's going to try the extraordinary. But I just felt some of the things he did were just a bit petulant and a bit sort of like, you know, like angry, sort of like, you know what I mean, frustrated, just like sort of, oh, sod it, I'm going to try and do this, and that, rather than sort of playing as a team player, which obviously wasn't fruitful. Again, it was a tough time for him to come into a game, really, and expect him to go and do something. But it didn't feel like the contributions he was making were geared towards, oh, this is going to get us a goal. It felt more like, oh, like, well, you know, I'm just going to do what I want here and try and take on six players or whatever. You know what I mean? It felt like a little bit, I don't know, I'm reading a lot into like a little 10-minute cameo, but just, I don't know, it felt a little petulant, his performance then. So... I don't know. You don't know. He could have just literally been annoyed and wanted to, you know, he hasn't been playing, so maybe you're reading too much into it, but they're all human at the end of the day. He's a good player. That's the thing. I hope he gets some opportunities at some point. I mean, I guess the thing is, we're winning so many games. You know, I mean, how can, you know, and it's not like, you know, we're not having to ask him to come on and change a game because we're already winning these games. You know what I mean? So, you know, he'll get opportunities if we're chasing games. You know what I mean? And if he weren't getting games, you know, he probably would have had opportunities. But how can you can't really change that ethos if it's producing results and winning games. So, like Godfrey's been now, he's just going to have to be patient, wait for his opportunity. The Cordy will have a suspension soon, but if he gets a book in the next couple of games, he probably will. That'd be five. You might get a chance then. You know, I mean, it's a cup game coming up. You know, he might get a chance then. You know what I mean? So, you know, he's just got to be patient and be professional. And like the rest of them, he's not the only one waiting for an opportunity. So, just going to have to wait.
Toffeeweb.com is the longest running Everton website, with an archive of more than 35,000 articles. This is the Toffeeweb podcast.
All right, well, let's finish off with our weekly question. And in view of Vitaly Mykolenko's uptick in form, Paul, this was yours. What other Everton player, past or present, has won you over? You know, someone who you weren't convinced by, but they improved and eventually became, you know, sort of an indispensable part of the team.
I've written a couple down, but there's one which really stands out, and it's probably, I imagine, probably on the tip of your tongue, Sue. It's Stephen Naismith. I thought when he came, I don't know, not too sure about him. Looks, I don't know, coming from the Scotland, he looked good in Scotland. Is he really going to make it? You know, like them feelings. It took him a while to settle in, really. Didn't have loads of opportunities, did he, in that first season under Moyes as well, to be fair. And then he really took off on the Martinez. he became such an important, integral part. And then he was showing out the door, which was frustrating, really, because he just showed a good attitude and Ace Smith in games. He was feisty as well. And I don't knack a score, and then he knew where the goal was. Just quite calm in front of the goal. Yeah, much better player than I originally gave him credit for. I was a bit disappointed when he left. So, yeah, that'll be it's the one that stands out for me, Stephen Naismith.
Obviously scored a hat-trick against Chelsea as well. Nice and fitting. Yeah, he was definitely on my list as well because, yeah, certainly Emote was a kind of strange free transfer, wasn't it? It was when Rangers were having financial difficulties. I remember thinking, it feels a bit kind of Jermaine Beckford territory of this, someone who's going to kind of come and go. And yeah, I guess he did, but he certainly made an impact under Martinez. The other one I thought of immediately was Lee Carsley, where there wasn't much fanfare around his sign. I think he was one of the last Walter Smith signings. And obviously not a very glamorous signing for lots of reasons. Buying a bald man from Coventry is never really going to be sort of too glamorous. But
hope we've got no bald listeners in Coventry now, Adam.
Yeah, if we have Lee, if you're listening, sorry, mate. I'm about to say nice things about you, I promise. But obviously, he was such a pivotal part of that fourth place finish, and then continue to be. I think he got injured right at the end of that season, but then obviously continue to be a real sort of fulcrum in that David Moyes side, and allowed a lot of other players to really play the best football. Leon Osman, I mentioned before, certainly Kale and Arteta as well. So he's a one for me. And again, there's that caveat with this question there. It's not as if Mikalenko's been dreadful. The other kind of candidate might have been someone like an Alex Iwobi, I guess, where there was a clear kind of uptick in form, and part of it's based on your expectation. But Mikalenko's certainly shown that give players that little bed in time, give the likes of Beto maybe a bit longer than a couple of games to fully judge them. Let players adjust to the new environment and hopefully reap the benefits. It was yours, Lyndon.
Yeah, I don't know if this is more in line with the question in terms of an uptick in form. It's more just players who sort of came in that you didn't have big expectations of, but eventually became really impressive players. And the two that came to mind immediately were Gareth Barry, who we signed, you know, kind of at the end of his career. And yes, he was coming from Manchester City and he was already a very good player. But, you know, I wasn't expecting him to come in and sort of have the impact that he did. And then the other one was Steven Pienaar, who I think was kind of almost washed up at that point. He's really struggling in Dortmund, and then came in and became a star player. And I suppose you could say the same thing of Mikel Arteta as well. Yeah. You know, I mean, he had a spell at Rangers, had sort of not done that much in Spain. And then, you know, Moyes brings him in and all of a sudden he just, blossoms. And those are the kinds of signings that just seem that much harder to make now, because everyone seems to have, you know, all the scouts have got all the information, all the stats and all these databases and stuff. It just seems to be harder to kind of pick those gems out. But those are the ones that came to mind for me.
He did that a lot, Moyes, didn't he? Kind of, and it didn't always work, bringing in someone like a Van der Meijde, for example, and it didn't quite pay off. But the other one, there's a couple actually at the back I was going to mention. Other Moyes signings were Phil Jagielka, obviously came in and sort of played more in a sort of midfield role. But again, it's not like he was terrible for a year and then finally woke up.
Right.
And then a similar tangent would have been Julian Lescott as well, who sort of, you know, I wasn't particularly excited about, but certainly arrived, played in an unfamiliar position at left back, and then made centre back his own. And who knows, maybe Ben Godfrey's going a kind of long way around doing the same thing.
Going back a bit further, one I remember a sign and think, I'm seeing him a few times. Think, he's pretty awful. I don't really know what he's going to contribute here. But then by the end, by the time he left, I thought, he was actually, I quite liked him. In the end, he was quite a good, good feisty player who tried his best. I'm dragging this on and on and on here. Getting everyone into Spence, aren't I? Mark Pembridge. Not a really gifted player, but like certainly, you know, he had some qualities and made the most of what he had. And by the end, fair play. He's like, you know, came, wasn't impressed, and really won me over by thinking, okay, you know, sometimes effort and hard work is enough to do that for you sometimes, isn't it? You know, so that was probably the next one on my list. Yeah.
Kevin Kilbane as well.
Good old Zinedine Kilbane. All right, well, thanks, fellas. We'll wrap it up there. We'll be back after the Burnley game, and hopefully we'll be celebrating another 3 points that gives us that much bigger cushion between us and the bottom three. But we'll be back, as I say, possibly with a full team. Until then, Blues, take care as always, and up the Toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.